Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Hey everybody, in this episode of the Legends of Tomorrow After Show, we're breaking down the season finale, season 3, episode 18, the good, the bad, the cuddly. We'll be talking about what we loved, what we didn't, and then we're going to be giving Dave Child a lot of hugs.
Let's like it. Hugs.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, yes. Don't call them legends. Oh, don't call them legends. Just call them outcasts and misfits. That's right. Yeah. I blew that line.
They're not heroes.
Take two.
Take two. Welcome everybody to Legends of Tomorrow After Show. We're breaking down every episode this season. This happens to be the last one that we'll be doing for season 3. Again, episode 18, The Good, the Bad, the Cuddly. I'm your host, Frank Moran.
I'm Dave Child.
I'm Lex Michael.
And I'm Lucretia Lyon.
And of course, folks, like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and Lucretia's got her computer up and running, which means the chat is up and running as well. So yeah. Feel free to share your thoughts about this episode in particular, or the series in general.
Just tell us how you feel.
Just tell us. We want to know your feelings.
Do you like cake? We like cake.
Yeah, talk about that in the chat. Well, before we get into the episode in particular, though, just a quick round the horn of what we thought.
It was fun. I had fun. There was some moments that it didn't quite hit for me, and I feel like they just jumped over a few kind of important dramatical moments. Dramatical. Yeah. Very dramatical. I like dramatical moments in my TV. But it did have a lot of fun. I love that end fight, and I also like Mick just talking about, are we making a baby, several times. Mm-hmm. Yes. That was enough for me to like the episode, but there was some weird moments.
Yes, Cronin baby got me I got a lot of mileage off of Cronin baby. I'm with you. There were several elements to this episode that I had an absolute blast with, some things that got me waving my arms with glee. There were also a few things that, while I really loved them conceptually, I loved them on paper, I felt, we tossed a lot of things off in terms of execution that I wish we really, really hadn't. Because there's some really big stuff that happens in this episode that doesn't feel as big as it should.
No.
Yeah, like the two big emotional beats in this were just kind of, actually probably three. I would consider Damian Dark's also to be kind of big. And it's just like, oh, yep, they're dead or this happened. And that was it. But like the fun parts were really fun. Like I loved Gary's Constantine cosplay.
Yeah. I think that just fulfilled a fantasy for you at that moment. Those two Constantines in the room.
Yep.
Yeah.
It felt it was just kind of underwhelming. As somebody that, this makes me look back fondly for the season 1 season finale.
Oh, no. Never again.
You're pining for Vandal Savage?
I don't know.
It's almost the exact opposite of what happened in the season 1 finale, where like I hated the showdown at the end. Because the logic just didn't make sense to me. But the rest of the lead up to it was fine. In this case, my favorite part was the showdown at the end.
Yeah, so. But I just like, I think there was probably just more dramatic moments, at least that hit better in the season 1 finale.
Yeah, maybe.
In terms of this, oof, I was underwhelmed.
The biggest beef
Let's get into beefs, guys.
Beefs. that was in the soundboard of AfterBuzz now. The biggest one I had was like Rip's death.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which was what that just happened.
Did it not feel like it came completely out of nowhere and did not feel entirely earned?
And we didn't even get a final scene with him and Jonah Hex. Jonah Hex is just moving on to Zari now.
That was kind of disrespectful. Jonah wasn't even like, hey, where's my buddy Rip? Where's my best bud Rip, who I secretly am in love with? That whole love relationship we've spent so long pining over. Everyone has been pining over that relationship.
I know.
It's just brushed off. And also, like, but with Rip, they just, if last week's episode ended with that, that would have felt much better.
Yeah.
It would have felt like they could have spent the whole episode kind of having a Rip-centered episode around every move, talking to Ava, mm-hmm. revealing the secrets to Ava, all that stuff, and then ending with, like, Rip doing one final move after the demon has just popped out. That would have been great. Mm-hmm. But instead we have this, like, beginning of the episode. They try to put in a little few clips of him to kind of make you feel a little something about losing him.
Right. And this, because this whole season started off with Rip knowing about the threat to Malice and wanted to try to stop it. I mean, he's the one that was the most doggedly pursuing it. And to have him taken out in this fashion at the beginning, you're like,
oh, and this is right. the end of Rip? This is the last we're going to see of him?
I mean, there
was
no,
what's weird. Yeah.
There's no body, though, right? Yeah. Like, he disappears. No. So at any point, Arthur Darvill could be like, hey, totally, I'll come in and do an episode or two, and he can waltz back in. But it ultimately feels like, intellectually, I get exactly what the importance of this. Completely get it. I didn't feel it. I felt like a little like the element of it where he says he wants to be with his family again, essentially. Like that I felt was, it was a bit affecting, but in the center of this storm of meaninglessness.
Yes.
I was still getting into the episode. I mean, this is an episode we watch weekly. It's not one that we binge. So it's one that, like, this week I was still getting into the feeling of the episode, and then all of a sudden Rip's dead, and it just didn't feel like it was earned, like you said. And
yeah, which is strange for this show, because, you know, both Stein's death, which was part of the crossover, but on the Legends portion, and then you had Captain Cold's death, those were done so well. Yeah. So it seemed so odd, and that's why surely this isn't it, but I feel like this episode had the same problem that several others did, where they needed to be more than one episode, but because their episode count is shorter, they're having trouble telling these stories. Right. And so sometimes it's like, I don't really blame them, but it feels like they had all these,
in a way.
Yeah. Well, I guess the struggle, too, is that we've also commented that, you know, what is Rip Hunter's place in the show anymore? But that doesn't mean that when he is going to be permanently moved off the board, that it shouldn't be something that hopefully at least emotionally pays off for the audience as well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind him kind of getting taken off the board, to be honest, but I feel like, it needs to have that emotional depth to it.
Right, like, why did he make this sacrifice play now? Why not? At any other point you could have him do this. Why was it important that he do this now? I get, again, the logic of, I'm going to hold off Malice so you can escape, but what are the emotional stakes? Because Malice is just a big, like, CG, he's just a CG metal demon. Right. And as it turns out, we don't ultimately do too much more with him beyond CG metal demon. So when our stakes are that disconnected from...
We do see him take over people. So he still has the power to possess people and kind of command armies.
Yes, but in his final form, right? He's still like the CG, right, the metal demon. So when that's the case, when it's so out there and bonkers, right? Like, what is there to connect to if not like a solid emotional foundation that, just wasn't there? You could have done like the Yondu in Guardians Volume 2, right? Like, after all of the lies and the manipulation and all of the ways that Rip is dicked with them and screwed them over, whether inadvertently or very intentionally, he does one, he's like, let me do this thing for you guys, let me do this right.
Well, also in Guardians 2, you have adopted stepfather versus real father.
Right.
So that has that added weight to it. So yes. That's why I felt like the payoff was, oh man, this is the real dad. This is the real father. To this character.
Y'all are going to make me cry here again.
Yeah. Well, I know. I mean, it's affecting, but this is like... And also, while we're talking beefs, also, I don't understand why they brought... It was nice to see Jax back.
Yeah.
But I don't know what he did.
Yeah, like, that was the thing, is why was he there? That's what seemed odd. Like, because I would have thought if there was like a totem... But nope, it was just like, hey... I'm here.
I mean, they brought back people that could be part of their army, and like a lot Ava of them could sense. Fight. Yeah,
Helen of Troy made sense.
Yeah, and the Water Witch is who's now reborn. Kuasa made sense too because she can fight.
Yeah,
and she's like, but Jax, I feel like he's never been. He's been kind of a fun fighter when he's put into a corner, but I wouldn't call him in. And also, when they called him in, it was nice to see him there, but. It's so obvious that they're taking him off the board because now he has a family.
Yeah.
I did like, though, that he, if, I guess 5 years later when they show up and grab him out of the timeline again, I like that he does get to have the core, like the nuclear family unit that Stein didn't get to live to have.
Right. I also wish, okay, they're bringing Jax back. And it happened at a time where they're like, who's really going to, we can't wield these totems because they don't quite fit us. We need people who have experience holding these totems, and they seem to bring them, but then they don't give them the totems. Mm. So even like Jax would be a far, it'd be fun to see him with a fire totem.
Yeah, that's what I thought he was going to do.
Yeah, so he could be kind of like a halfway Firestorm, and then he gives it up and passes it over, and I'm going to go back to the family. That would be a much nicer thing to do with Jax, but they didn't even do that. They didn't even waste, they didn't give him the fire totem at all. He just went around and kicked some people's butts and then left. But it didn't feel like, if you're going to bring him, give him the fire totem, have him turn into like a mini Firestorm that doesn't fly. You could even have his, like, give him fiery hair because of the totem. You could do a lot of this fun, and they didn't even do that.
Well, the other thing, too, with that is that we saw last episode with Ray trying to make the water totem work, and he couldn't, but it was so quick to do it this episode.
Yeah.
But right out of the gate, he's like, oh, I'm just shooting water. Like, well, you couldn't get it to activate before. And then immediately it's taken off and it's given over to Wally. And
yeah,
so that Ray can have his other journey. This was just an episode, I felt, of just a lot of, you should care about these because we're telling you should care, but we're not really going to make you care.
Also, was anyone thought, okay, I'm going to check in with you guys. When it comes to Jonah, and when Zari says, nice hat, of course I'm kidding. It's because those are Confederate colors, right?
It's a Confederate hat.
It's a Confederate hat. So she's kind of shading him for being a part of the Confederacy and her being a person of color.
Mm.
And she kind of even gets eyes with Wally, and they look at each other like, what's with this Confederate chump? And then she falls in love with him and gladly takes the hat.
Star-crossed romance, my dude.
I just don't. It was so forced, weirdly.
From two worlds.
I don't understand why it was forced. I don't understand
both
it.
Both alike in dignity.
Well, and it was just like, why did we need that? Because Jonah should have been mourning Rip.
True. Yeah. It's just, it's
it never came up is still very odd.
You know what I think it is? I think they were trying to do, if I can kind of guess, but they didn't really make Jonah very alt-righty.
Yeah.
But I think they were trying to make an alt-right Confederate guy fall in love with a Muslim woman and peace on earth, goodwill to men.
Yeah.
Which is a great idea, but there was not enough time devoted to it.
No.
And I think the fact that he was wearing Confederate colors probably passed over a lot of people. But and so it was weird when she's like, yeah, I'll take the Confederate hat. The Confederates aren't so bad after all. It's weird.
It is, because I feel like, I guess it seems we get one Jonah X appearance a season. So I guess we'll get one next season. But otherwise, we're not really going to dwell on this. So this attempted kind of burgeoning romance between the two of them is something that we're never really going to follow up on.
But at the same time, I do like going back to Salvation, and Salvation being a place where it's like a time dead zone. So they feel like they had enough time to at least regroup there rather than anywhere else.
But see, that's just to jump back for one second. My last thought about Rip was that his sacrifice ultimately meant nothing. I mean, it delayed Malice like a couple minutes.
But otherwise, like barely an act.
Yeah. He sent his henchmen in pretty much right away. So I'm like, I wish this had been a sacrifice that had happened like midway through the season. So that way it feels like for several episodes, it seems like Malice is off the table and realizing, Rip didn't do it. So, but to give that moment some weight, I feel like he really, truly did sacrifice himself, and that temporarily took Malice off the board. It wasn't able to permanently destroy him.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. I wish it came a little earlier. What did we think of saving,
Nora.
Nora.
I liked that. And this was another thing, is I really liked all the beats with her and Damian Dark. That was the part that kind of disappointed me, that there wasn't more to his death and his sacrifice, because he really had this good character arc. But to be honest, it kind of had at least been serviced most of the season, but it's still just like in the moment. But that's why I liked Ray punching Nate and helping Damian Dark. That was kind of funny.
I kind of like it, because I felt like it was almost a payoff out of all the moments we were like, Ray, what are you doing? Stop doing this. But in this case, it made sense.
Yeah. It makes me reflect back to a couple episodes ago where Nate was being held by the Darks. Yeah. And I was just wishing that it had been Ray, because that would have been... So again, I feel like I wish it had been Ray, just so we'd have more... develop more of that Ray-Damian Dark relationship throughout the season, rather than just doing this one-off with
Nate. Well, you did have the Ray with Nora and Damian Dark all in, like...
The assassin one.
Yeah, the assassin one.
But, I mean, I felt like that's our through line, so why not keep continuing that? So it lands even harder at the end of this season finale, as opposed to, like, we just do this one-off with Nate that really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I guess that's true, but I felt like this was at least... I felt like his payoff for the death of Dark actually happens right before he becomes a heavy metal demon.
Yeah.
So that's that. There is kind of a moment where you see him sacrifice himself, and it was kind of a nice moment for Dark, at least.
But it felt like, to me, it felt like it was over far too quickly. Like, I really liked all of the Damien and Ray stuff leading up to it, and I really loved that this was the obvious, like, we were building to this moment for Damien all season long, the moment where he chooses to heroically sacrifice himself for his daughter. But I felt like, even though on paper this was exactly where it had to go, and this was like a perfectly satisfying and dramatically sound conclusion to his story, it felt, again, to me, like a moment we just and then moved on from.
I'd agree. Yeah, it's...
And, like, not for nothing, this is a big character in this universe. This character has appeared across multiple shows and has been a very strong presence for years now. So especially if he is now off the table indefinitely, it is a bit of a bummer to me that we've scooted past it so quickly.
Yeah, but I feel like with him and with Rip, these are people that will possibly show up again. And that may be why their deaths weren't as, like, you know... jarring, you know, in some ways.
We do live in a world with time travel and alternative universes.
Right. So. My thing is here, okay, so as they describe it, they have to find out, like, Nate and Amaya go on this nice kind of spirit journey. They drink the juice. They go on a little mind trip to learn how to make these totems work.
I do like drugged out Nate.
that was so funny. I love how he just drinks the whole thing. That he's like, no, if you're going on a trip, I'm going with you. That was me.
Yeah,
and I love the also, you were supposed to just take a sip of that.
Yeah.
That was me.
I feel like their journey, it was so rushed into like, huh? Okay, sure. So, but I mean, again, if you give it more time.
Care Bear Stare, man.
Yeah, you're losing more time in the episode, which we couldn't lose. But then it gets under the first attempt, and they create this. You mentioned this kind of Cronenberg-esque creature.
Mm-hmm.
So
I do, and Mick is like, "Are we making a baby? Yeah. Are we making a baby?" That was one of my favorite moments.
And I'm just trying to understand the difference between that, and then we see them at the end where they fully create what these totems do when they work in concert.
They learn,
because the first time they create an entity that doesn't survive, or they kill it. It's some kind of weird kind of creature. But in the second attempt, they actually become it.
They were more focused this time, and this time they were distracted.
Oh, sure.
I think they were always meant to kind of become the thing after it was created.
But they didn't get
that far with the Cronenberg baby.
Yeah, we never really quite, because I couldn't, even there, it's like, it seemed like it was leading to, they're creating something that is going to exist independently.
No, I wouldn't say so, because Nate was always calling it Voltron.
Yeah, I thought that was funny.
He was saying we're basically doing a Voltron, and what Voltron is all of...
Form feet and legs, and I'll form the head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's, in that way, I think they were saying... we're all going to become one creature.
I felt like it was more Captain Planet than Voltron, but that's mostly because that's on my zeitgeist.
Well, that's what Cronenberg baby kind of was you conjure something all together, and it's another thing. But Voltron is what their final form, which was Bebo. And I was like, at first, I was like, are they making the Stay Puft?
That's what I thought, too. Yeah. I was like, is it Stay Puft? Because it was very much like the setup for Stay Puft.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I think it was kind of a nod towards Ghostbusters.
Very much so.
In a way.
Before we get into our stuff that we enjoyed about the episode, there's one last thing about Kuwasa.
Before you're happy.
Oh, yeah, before you're happy. So Kuwasa, now in this new altered timeline, has been set up. And so it's set up that her and Mari, they share the spirit totem.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out exactly how that works.
They pass it off.
Well, I figure how sharing works, but that's
how sharing works. Yes. It's like you get Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays. I'll get Sundays, Mondays, Wednesdays.
Are they living in this? I assume they're living in the same town. If one has a big crisis and the other one doesn't, what happens?
Yeah.
FedEx. Overnight delivery.
I guess. We get to the end of the episode, too, where... Nate, it's been leading up to this. Amaya's got to go back to 1942 Zimbabwe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this has been led up to as a huge moment. And we see at the beginning of the season how distraught Nate was about the first time that Amaya just disappeared on him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How devastated he was. And then we get to this, which is supposed to be this whole buildup for not only one, but like two seasons that she needs to go back to Zimbabwe to reestablish her timeline. And it feels so just... as you said, we just boop right past it.
Does Nate not seem overly chill about it?
Absolutely. And not enough where you can say, don't look back, don't look back. That's not enough for me.
What I wanted desperately, what would have completely fixed it for me, is when he says, don't look back, don't look back, don't look back, he does, has to go back to her, and they actually say goodbye to each other like two people that love each other.
Yes.
You know what I would have done it for me and would have been far more tragic is if they actually do wipe her memory, and he has this nice little moment between two strangers.
Oh.
Yeah, and then he says, okay, bye. And she's like, oh, that guy was kind of cute. You know, and then then he walks away and says, don't look back.
Yeah.
That would have been far more effective.
Yes, oh yes.
And that wouldn't have taken up that much time either. It's like, I agree with that. There was a lot of like emotional moments that were just kind of paved over. But at the same time, I think they kept it that way because they didn't want to end on a downer. And it was heading towards the end of the episode. And so they were trying to keep everything light and happy.
But I feel like you knew from the beginning this was not an ending that can be happy.
This should have been the end, a Doctor Who ending is what we really wanted.
Well, and not for nothing, you could have gone that way on all three of the major exits. And that little tag on the end of the show with them on the beach, Constantine shows up. No matter how down you were feeling a minute ago, you're going to go, oh, this is fun. I love that guy. Yay, season four.
Dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, for as much as, because even episode, was it 17 or 16, hadn't been set up at the beginning of the season. We knew he was coming in, like, episode 13, and then again for the season finale. And then this is what we got out of season finale. It was just like a stinger from him at the end. Like, oh, all right.
Yeah, that's what I thought was odd, is they had kind of really played this up, but when really he only showed up at the end. But I felt like he would have taken away from all the other stuff going on. There was already so much going on, and this is coming from me, even.
Yeah. I don't think so. I think it would have been more sense to have him in with that little...
like with Jax and Helen?
Yeah. That's true.
Jax, Helen, and Constantine, and then it would have been... And then maybe they would become like Bebo or something, like, you know, I don't know.
We do got a though real quick shout out. Like, I love that Helen of Troy is now full on Amazon.
Amazon.
Yes.
But it's scary.
Why isn't she controlling men anymore? Why aren't men affected by her anymore?
That's true.
Huh.
To be fair, where she's been for a good long while, there are no men. So maybe she's just a little bit rusty.
She never wanted it. It's just something that she was cursed with.
But maybe it's fated. They can't find Themyscira. The little curse monsters can't find Themyscira. And she only went to Salvation, and they probably, little curse monsters probably can't find Salvation.
What I'm saying is like,
curse monsters.
It was weird because she could have turned into a very powerful weapon by being there.
Yes.
She could have like turned everyone on each other because of her abilities, but and while also kicking ass as a Wonder Woman Amazon.
Yes.
You know, she could have been doing both, and then they didn't do anything with it. They just forgot about it. It was weird.
Were we satisfied with the his basically his main henchmen for Malice? That we've got Caesar, we had our Blackbeard, and we had Eric the Viking's
sister.
It
was nice. I was glad to see Blackbeard back.
Yeah,
is that
I like
the same
him.
Caesar.
It was a new Caesar, from what I've heard.
Isn't that weird?
He's busy, I guess. And that's why I guess you keep doing the helmet the whole time, so it doesn't seem so obvious.
I guess. It's just like... Caesar was like a passing joke. Well, like he was kind of a joke in the episode he appeared on. He wasn't even... Was he there for the whole episode? I don't even remember.
Wasn't that the one where he basically he was like the sports almanac-y story?
Yeah, he showed up on the beach, and then there was all these salad jokes, I remember.
Right.
Yeah. And Mick punched him out.
But I don't think he did too much as a person, so it was kind of weird having Caesar again. I thought Blackbeard was great, and the Viking woman was great. I thought, because those were actual villains of their respective episodes, just Caesar seemed a little strange. I was surprised it wasn't like, I don't know. Another villain that we've passed, but it's—I guess it's been a lot of dark, so it's hard to think of another one.
All right, well, we've talked about this moment, kind of bits and pieces, I kind of alluded to it, but let's just fully embrace the moment that Dave Child loved more than anything.
Yes,
Bebo's been a reoccurring element in not just this show, but the whole DC.
And it's like, what are they doing with the? And like, if they didn't necessarily have to be doing anything, but for like a year now, it's like, what are they doing with this presence of this cuddly, weird, like Sully Furby thing?
Yeah,
are we building towards something with this? And if so, what could it possibly be? This, I was very happy.
I would love to see the writers' room, and I feel like there's just all these like serial killer murder lines, like. Threads that connect. It's just, how does Bebo work into everything? And I thought this was great. I thought it was a fun CGI fight that they came up with.
Yeah, I thought the CGI was really well done on that.
Yes. It made me realize why they chose a heavy metal demon, because it was a good counter to, to furry Bebo.
Yep.
And it was a nice kind of back and forth between the two, and I just love how Bebo talk like Bebo. And they did some great animation with the eyes kind of rolling. I feel like they saved all the budget for this one moment. Yes. And they paid it off. It was fun.
Yeah, although I felt like it just like a giant body slam was enough to take him out. That seemed weird.
Come on, man. It was more than a body slam. He was a creature made out of love and togetherness of the legends. And he was... And that was just like the form our minds can comprehend. You know, I mean, it's just like, because he was like a mythical creature kind of that was a Voltron of all of them. He disappears right when that happens, kind of a dissolve. I feel like that was just the finishing move, but really they were fighting all of the totems like kind of put together.
Yeah, I love Luna Malfoy 7 here in the chat. I want to know what the writers were smoking and where can I get some when they thought of that. Yes. And I'm like, yeah.
Yes.
I agree.
But Frank, if your point is that you felt that for a villain as built up, whose reputation so preceded him as this all-powerful universe-conquering force, if your point is that it seems like he was maybe arguably underutilized all season long, I cannot say I wholeheartedly disagree.
Gosh, thanks, Lex.
Yeah, Frank. You're welcome.
Well, I think he was better than the better than like Vandal Savage way back in the day.
Yeah, but was he better than Legion of Doom?
No,
nothing's better than the Legion of Doom. That was fun.
No, last season just pretty much hit on all cylinders in terms of wrapping up a season for that.
Yes.
This one, a little less so. But one of the biggest hooks is as that Sarah keeps on saying throughout the episode that they shouldn't be the totem bearers. And we were talking about that for a second about other candidates that were coming on. But Ava Sharp comes in to give some tough love, says, you know what, look at all you've done, all the lives you affected. Look, we've came here to help you. We wouldn't do this if we didn't believe in you. You need to believe in yourselves.
Yeah.
Are we now past the phase where we're not going to get that cold open next season? Like, don't call us outcasts and misfits. Call us legends. Have they fully embraced their
legends? Never past it.
Yeah, they need to do that forever and ever.
That's their "I'm the fastest man alive." You know, that's their. They're gonna keep saying it.
You don't want them tooting their own horn. We destroyed.
We
a big
are so good. Are we?
Yes.
Yeah, even though Nate Milton in the chat says, no, Frank, we will not accept your petty hashtag Bevo beef. He will beat evil with love. What more do you need, man? But I say the same. Your hashtag intro beef. No.
No.
No. I think we need it. It's ridiculous.
Praise Bebo. Hashtag yeah. Praise Bebo. That was mine.
So one addition we had to the Legends team, partway through the season, courtesy of Rip Hunters, we introduced Wally into the cast.
Yes.
Now we're here at the end of the season. He's going to be coming back next season as well. How do you like how he fits in?
I mean, as far as powers go, I think he fits in. Personality-wise, we haven't quite seen it yet, because I think we've been very busy with, like, very rushed plot lines. So, yes. But they're using his speed well. And I like how they're, like, even in this episode when they were wrapping everything up, he was the one that was kind of quickly bringing everyone back to the Wave Rider, and they're able to use him well. So I'm excited. I think he looks great in the cowboy outfit.
Sure.
I think they're using his style really well. His hair looked great in this episode.
I do like that when they first they get to Salvation. He's like, you know, I know your buddy just died, but like, who gives a shit? Look how great I look. He's like, awesome, look at this. I just want to stop everybody right now and just talk about how awesome I look in these threads.
That's another thing, too, when Jack showed up and said, where's Rip? And she's like, oh, you don't want to know. Anyways. Like, oh, my God. Just, they didn't care about Rip at all.
No. No, and you remember, like, when he's sacrificing himself at the end of that call, Sarah's just like, bye, Captain. Boop.
Goes on to
do something.
We lost him.
And like, it's I guess kind of sweet that she calls him Captain. Like, that's I guess a nice moment. But once again, we rush through it so quickly that it ends up not feeling like anything.
I wish he put one more. By the way, Gideon, code 11555666889999, and then it's just like a party bursts out in the middle thing. This is like, ah, and it's just dancing rips and it's his like it's his goodbye Will or something.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like next season you could have the Will of Rip Hunter and unlock a bunch of secrets.
Oh, that would be nice actually. The Will of Rip Hunter.
Now, so we get Rip Hunter's death this season.
Yes.
We've got Victor Stein's death this season as well.
Mm-hmm. Jax has left the show.
Yes. Now, looking back at the end of the season, I feel like, especially in the last several episodes, we talked about, like, there's too many storylines going on for what we needed to do. No storyline was getting its full due.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back upon this whole season, do you think, like, this show adequately paced itself? Do you feel like they slow burned it too much at the beginning of the season, and now at the end they had to jam so much in that it became unsatisfying?
Objection, these are all leading questions.
Okay.
Because of course, yes, yeah. It was like they felt very rushed this season. It felt like they didn't quite know how to pace it out. But it's I feel like they probably had more restrictions this season than ever before. And they also had probably these big ideas with Bebo and a demon that they were leading to, and they wanted to make sure that they had it for that, and they probably got the episode shorted on them, and they weren't very sure how to get through it. So, yeah, I think they can maybe work on that next season. I'm curious about, like, who's our cast members now?
The chat's been talking about that Maisie, who plays Maya, is scheduled to still be a regular for season 4.
Interesting.
But she may be playing a new character. So, yeah, Charmed Original in the chat keeps mentioning that. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I know Ava got bumped up to series regular next year.
Which is good.
As far as like our original crew members, right? It's like Sarah, Mick, and Ray. Is there anybody else that's still there?
I imagine maybe we'll get Nora sticking around.
Yeah, I kind of think that she's going to stick around because the chemistry between her and Ray was off the charts. I mean,
it seems like she has she still has those force powers.
Yeah,
that wasn't just something that Malice had. I thought that was
true. Well, because I mean, we see from Dark that I mean, even he had his abilities, even when
right
necessarily a totem. It seemed like
so we'll be kind of, and especially if next season's going to be them basically becoming time demon hunters. It will be good to have kind of a witchy woman on their side.
Yeah.
Sure.
It feels like this was the third season. I feel like even with season 1 and season 2, pacing has always been an issue with the Legends.
Mm-hmm.
Like even last season with the Legion of Doom, which is awesome, but I still felt like that was just poorly paced as well, too.
It did feel like for much of the season, we were laying groundwork. Oh, shit, we have 3 episodes left. Burn.
Yeah. And I certainly, you're right. There's a lot of production, logistical, real-world stuff that goes into this. But it feels like it's your third season. You would think like you might be able to get better about just the pacing of things out.
What I found odd, too, and what makes me think it was a budgetary surprise or something, was there was one episode that felt like filler, except for the Ava stuff. That was the one that had the Ava storyline.
Yeah.
And then all the other storylines felt like fillers. Why was that even there? They could have spent all the energy they put into the last 2 episodes into that one episode and kind of expanded it.
It more of like a mythology episode than a one-off, and keep the Ava clone stuff as a B-plot to the rest of the stuff.
And that's a good way of building up Rip. Like, maybe he's confronted with it at the very beginning. I don't know. This is all backseat writing right now.
Absolutely. But do we feel, since Rip took himself off the board, did you feel like last episode with him and Ava's discussion about why he did what he did, was that enough of a resolution? Because I felt like it wasn't.
I feel like they're going to bring it back somehow. Like, they're going to bring back Ava's past somehow. And I want to see them do it. And I think that could be good.
Yeah. I'll be curious about that. Now, the executive producer of the show said, in terms of new cast members to add to the team, says that somebody's going to be coming right out of the gate. But somewhere along the season, that's their hopes to be able to add
Swamp
somebody on.
Thing.
My hope, right, especially because now Constantine is going to be a series regular. We're going to be playing with more mystical, demonic stuff. Mm-hmm. My hope is that really will force the door open to let in some more Justice League Dark elements. Whether it's Swamp Thing, I think Etrigan the Demon would be amazing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I really want Etrigan, because with Etrigan, you can have a fun CGI demon, and you can also have Jason Blood, who could be like a swarthy, redheady guy.
Right.
So that could be fun. Just bring in the guy from Riverdale as Jason Blood. Bring in Archie.
Kijiapa?
Yeah.
Archie could be Jason Blood in
this
one.
And there's also Zatanna that we also have as
possibility
as well.
Yes. I do feel like if we keep Nora around, Zatanna would be somewhat redundant since they're both dark-haired, pretty lady magic wielders.
Yeah.
But you can never have enough.
Only one of them wears pants. So
yeah. That's true. One is in pants and one is in like fishnet leggings.
Yeah. They didn't go with that look for Black Canary, so they may not do it there either if they were.
True.
And what is the status of Malcolm Merlyn? Is he still alive? We just haven't seen him. Is he officially dead?
They're calling him dead as far as, like, you know, a storyline going on Arrow right now, but death means nothing when you have a wave rider.
And they also just found a bunch of Lazarus pits on Arrow. Spoilers. They just found a bunch of Lazarus pits on Arrow. So I know.
I'm sorry, Dave.
I know. I know Dave was keeping up with Arrow. He was just a week behind.
I was just two weeks behind. On that.
Hasn't seen the show.
Oh, no.
He's real upset.
Well, Colton Hayes is coming back as a series regular next season.
Who is?
Arsenal?
Yes.
Yeah, sweet. Yeah. Now I need to know where they found the Lazarus pits. That's what I'm curious about.
All right.
Not how many.
As we start wrapping up, why don't we just go, what are some of your favorite moments from Legends of Tomorrow Season 3?
I will remember.
Yeah, let's take a look back at that. People will be lost.
I love this Bebo fight, and I love the Bebo episode with the Vikings too, and I think all the Bebo stuff was really fun. I think that was my favorite stuff, is when they have kind of fun and go full on silly.
I loved the flashback to Ray's childhood, the very like Amblin heavy episode. I thought was a lot of fun. All of the Constantine stuff I thought was great, and also I know this is a bit of a cheat because Legends only officially was a quarter of it, but this year's crossover Crisis on Earth X, like that's my Justice League movie.
Yeah.
You know, like I love that, and I thought the way that it resolved certain Legend storylines while furthering certain others, I thought was excellent. I mean, that's probably my favorite thing to come out of this entire shared universe, is that crossover from this year.
Yeah, I would agree. Crisis on Earth X was, you know, a real movie with DC characters, and it was just great. But yeah, I honestly really enjoyed most of this season. I'm a big fan of Damian Dark, and so we had him, and then of course we got Constantine, and yeah, the Bebo stuff. This season, for the most part, was just, even with all the high emotions and everything, was mostly fun episodes. I mean, you get Constantine playing Dungeons and Dragons with Gary.
Right, like, I also love, like, right, like, Gary was wearing cosplay, so I love the mental image of Constantine hanging out with someone dressed like him.
He was hanging out with him this entire time.
Playing D&D, presumably.
Yeah, he likes him.
Right, so, like, I love all of the moments that are so unique to this show, because whether or not the show is consistently firing on all cylinders, like, this is the only show on TV where we're gonna get the scene where Rey goes to the set of Lord of the Rings in 1999 to recruit John Noble to save the Malice Lines.
That was one of my favorite moments,
too. Yeah, that was funny.
Right, a bunch of things like that, right, that you only get on this show, right? So, like, Vamp, I'm going to keep, like, rattling them off.
I did enjoy No Country for Old Dads.
Yeah,
we're going back to Germany and get to see Cold War era Damian Dark, that sweet dude.
Yeah.
Or even, like, come on, like, the fact that, like, they had to go save young Barack Obama from Gorilla Grodd.
Yeah, and that was a nod towards Hedy Lamarr, which I thought was great.
Yes, was really cool.
She's one of my favorite, like, kind of weird old Hollywood trivia things that a lot of people don't know about, and they played with the fact that she was a scientist and a famous actress, and that was fun. I don't know. It's all that stuff was kind of...
The fact that we saw Themyscira this year on this show, even though it was only one shot and we don't actually hit the beach, that really cool. Like, we're continuing to also expand the greater mythology of this entire universe on this show.
Mm-hmm. Which show, if they ever got brave enough, or they were able to give them the green light, to introduce somebody like Wonder Woman? Because we've already introduced Superman, so the door is open for a possibility of using big three.
I bet you anything, if they do like a Wonder Woman show... It would be its own show. Maybe they would like play with it with Legends, where it's like teenage Wonder Woman. It's like Wonder Girl when she's kind of training.
Yeah. I feel like at most, especially now that the Wonder Woman movie was such a phenomenon and they're working on a sequel right now, I feel like the closest we'd get to a Wonder Woman show is almost like the Smallville version of Wonder
Smallville.
Woman.
Ugh, which I don't want to see. I don't want to see, or like, Longburn origin stories.
Right, and even
it's Gotham-y, and I don't want to see it either, but you were saying, like, how do you introduce that? I think that's what they would do.
Obviously, too, right, like, if you're going to introduce Batman into this universe, it makes infinite sense to have him show up for even an episode or two on Arrow, because it stands to reason that Bruce Wayne and Oliver Queen might know each other, if not...
Are they talking about that?
They have name-dropped Bruce Wayne. I think this year, he name-checked Bruce Wayne in Gotham City.
And Gotham City was also in, I think someone noticed that.
On Supergirl.
Oh, too. Even yeah. on this, when he brought yeah. the, when Dark brought the jitters, it was from Gotham City, jitters.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of a, that was kind of a nice nod even on this.
What do we want to see? Season 4, Legends of Tomorrow, coming back in the fall. We know that everything except iZombie as of yet has been greenlit for another season on the Zombie. CW. So what do you want to see? We know Constantine's in there. What do you want to see?
Swamp Thing.
And
Etrigan.
Etrigan.
Yep. Etrigan would be a nice
and
choice.
And Deadman. Deadman would be good, too.
Deadman would be so cool, because Timothy Oliphant as Boston Brand just needs to happen, guys.
Oh, yeah.
I think
he'd
be so good.
Ooh, that would be great. But yeah. also, like, seeing Timothy Oliphant with, like, a shaved head and white.
Because yeah, he, as one of the, there are two white guys that look good bald. Michael Rosenbaum and Timothy Oliphant, because Hitman maybe
a ten. Look bald.
Yeah, in Hitman.
Oh, he yeah. did. Oh, that yeah. was him.
Yeah, I know, because you barely recognize him, but I'm like, yeah, he's still hot.
I forget about that. That's fine.
I would like, because I imagine we're going to get another line-wide crossover again in the fall. One cool having Black Lightning in the mix would be awesome, but it would be cool if it was actually centered on Supergirl's Earth. As opposed, because so often she's coming to the other shows.
None of them have been over there except Barry, really.
Yeah. So it would be cool to have them over there for once and see what it would be like.
And see President Wonder Woman, because...
Yeah. There you go. Also, I wouldn't mind, like, it would be great to have Heat Wave meet the Martian Manhunter, because they probably hate each other.
Yeah, that's true. Jean does not care for fire.
Yeah, does not care for fire, and... I don't think Mick cares for order.
So, sidebar, I like that Martian Manhunter's big weakness is fire, because not for nothing, if you're alive, everyone's weakness is fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's because he can't comprehend it telepathically. That's why.
Yeah. I like Macintosh Harrington wants to see a Gary and Constantine romance. I'll ship it.
Mm. I think it's happening.
Yeah.
I think that's happening right now. I think that's what they're doing.
Yeah, that's the fact that he looks so bad.
He's cosplay. Going home wearing Constantine's clothes, man.
That wig was terrible. That wig was awful. Come on now. Ladies and gentlemen, we're getting ready to wrap up this season of the Legends of Tomorrow After Show. Folks, we couldn't have done it without you. Thanks so much for everybody for hopping in the chat and breaking down these episodes with us. Legends of Tomorrow is returning back for season 4 next year. Fingers crossed we'll be here covering it with you. Every single week that it's on. Until then, folks, as always, like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. And thanks, everybody, for hopping in the chat. But if you want to stay in touch with us even after the show's over, Lucretia, where can they find you?
Since I'm Lucretia Lyon, guys, you can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one. And you can find me at The Red Room Horror on YouTube, and it's also on Twitter, Instagram. That is my little show. New episodes every Thursday. And Mrs. Brightside will be back next week with my special guests, my family members, for the episode. So stay tuned for that every Tuesday. Yeah.
I am Lex Michael. I am all over social media at The Lex Michael. I also do a podcast with Tari J. Miller called Missing Out. It's about art, media, culture, experiences, how these things shape the people that we become and why they resonate with us the way that they do. It is the retrospective that's introspective. New episodes drop every Tuesday on iTunes and wherever podcasts can be found, Stitcher, Google Play, Podbean, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Every Tuesday, follow us on Twitter as well, at Missing Outcast. And if you follow the Twitter, you can get the little Missing Out Mondays. Every Monday, we do a little mini-sode covering some stuff that we dug from the week prior. Go, check it out. We love you. Big kiss. Mwah.
And I am Dave Child. You can find me at MRDaveChild on Twitter or DaveChild.com for all your Dave Child needs.
Love it. Love it.
I'm not done.
No, go. You do it.
I am not done. Do it. If you want to find me on AfterBuzz again, I'm also on the Westworld podcast and after show thingy talking about Westworld. So catch me there. And otherwise, just keep checking my website to see what I'm up to.
Look at that. And folks... certainly we're coming here to the end, but as always, if you like to learn, laugh, and love in all aspects of your life, one thing you can do is check out Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition. It's created by our founder here at AfterBuzz, Maria Menounos, and drops on iTunes every single Friday. Maria has celebrity influencer interviews talking about life, health, wellness, beauty, fashion, you name it. She talks about it. Let her be the big sister you never had. So you know what you can do? Go to iTunes, subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition for free. And when you do, let her know it was the Misfits and Outcasts from the Legends of Tomorrow After Show that got you there.
Mm-hmm.
Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition. Check it out. And you can check me out on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. Folks, until next season. Speed off.
Swampy. Swamp stuff.
Executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff. We would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
R.I.P. Rip.
He dead.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.